You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Episode 445 of After the Whistle, presented by Seneca Buffalo Creek Casino. Nothing else comes close. Reminder for everything coming up at Seneca. Make sure you go to SenecaNiagaraCasino.com if you haven't heard Craig's commercial. Jeff O'Neill joining us today. Fifth overall pick in the 1994 NHL entry draft. Played 821 games. 237 goals. Had a 41-goal season in 2000-2001, couple 30-goal seasons. Would have had multiple 20-goal seasons had he maybe not missed games in certain seasons. Terrific player. Talked about how he had to change his game from junior, where he put up like 329 points in 3 years in junior. And he only had 79 his first year, so you do the math. So I asked him, were you the same player in the NHL that you were in junior? And his answer is fantastic. He talked about the adjustment from center to the wing. It was kind of condescending what he said, too, with his answer. So I apologize for the informal start to the episode with Jeff, but we were talking about how much we all hated playing against each other, and I just had to hit record. Since retiring from hockey, he's gone on to become a broadcaster up in Canada on TSN. He's on the Leaf game nights, and he's also on Overdrive. You can find him on X, ODog92. It was supposed to come out on Tuesday, 18 years to the day that I did the golf swing against the Leafs. That's the day it was supposed to come out. But Sabres decided to fire Don Granato that day, so it kind of altered our path a little bit. But which I still can't believe happened, by the way. Got to just make sure I add that in there. I didn't think it was going to happen. Someone corrected me on social media too, by the way. They said, because I was on Shred and Reagan that morning, and they asked me what was going to happen. I said, nothing. So the guy's got a 2-year deal. I said, he's not going anywhere. We're stuck with him. Unless something drastic happens next year where the team just starts out of the gate completely flat and they have to fire him. But I just assumed he was coming back. So still kind of letting that process. Before I move on, I got to just say I heard a hilarious joke yesterday. Driving down the road and saw my ex. It's funny how I'd hit that changes meaning over the years. How else are you supposed to segue into a Celina Law commercial? If you've been hurt in a car crash, hopefully not caused by your ex, you know what to do. Call Celina Law. Call 888-888-8888. Here's Jeff O'Neill.
Like, I don't think any of these guys nowadays would say that about anyone. They're all like, I mean, we're all friends and we respect each other, but everyone was just an asshole.
I hit record because I want people to hear this. I mean, I don't know many players in the league that I had such a love hate for, and you were one of them. And it was more about your time in Toronto, as short as it was, or whatever, that we played against each other there. But you were a major fucking dickhead, man.
But, well, what about you? What about you, Petey, when you had your legendary golf swing and I'm like, this guy's not even playing in the playoffs and he has the audacity to come by our bench and take a driver swing with his stick. And I'm like, this guy, it
first
was
of all,
so annoying.
18 years to today. Told Craig this morning this on the way home. I was like, Craig, you should have heard the shit that O'Neill was saying about me in the paper after to all the media. You said something like, Well, we're going to be golfing next week. And if he wants to join us, he's welcome to join one of our forces because he's not going to be
playing. Well, I'm like, that guy is, because you got to admit, Petey, some of the tough guys back in the day, it was like come playoff time, a black ace would like basically take their place and they didn't play much. So I was like, if that guy wants to do that shit and we're golfing next week, he might as well come play with us because he'll be sitting right with us.
You guys must have been fuming after that. Pretty creative, if you ask me, against the rival that I did it against.
You know what? I don't know what, I'm sure you guys would agree, but it was almost like we played in an era where there was all kinds of nonsense going on. It was almost like we took joy and excitement out of, I mean, I wasn't a fighter, but just hacking and whacking and FU contests and the fighting. And then if we saw each other out after, we would have a bunch of beers and that's just the way it was going to be. But it was almost like the guys before us said, like, I remember when one of my warmups when I was a young guy, I was talking to Jason Allison at center ice and Gary Roberts was on my team and he just skated by and just gave it to me. And he said, what do you think this is? Like, this isn't the OHL anymore. And you're shooting the shit and you're having fun and you think it's a joke. So then that part of my life was over. It was like, it was pretty serious, but on the ice, it was like, you kind of, if you didn't hate the opponent or hate the guys you were playing against or play with some animosity, it was like we were taught that you just didn't care. So even if you actually didn't care, you better fake it to make it and act like you hated everybody. And everything was so serious. And I'm sure you guys would find now watching, it's like some of the games, like you get a
Tuesday
night
sleep.
Though?
How did that change so much?
You know how it changed, Riv? Where all these guys locked up to long-term contracts. And it's like, I hear stories of assistant coaches saying they come back to the bench and the coach tries to talk to them. They're like, no, it's fine. I got it. I understand what I did. You know, it's just, they kind of have a lot of power and it's, and they must be thinking, and it's not everybody. There's obviously some great competitors and we all know to play in the league, you got to have that kind of juice to go out in the ice. But I think there's just long-term contracts. Everybody's feeling good and locked up. And it's like, why do I need to hate somebody else? Or why do I need to tell that guy to F off or punch a guy in the face? Because things are pretty good in my life. I think that's a big change in it.
You're like what this generation now needs. As much as your skill, your skating was insane. You could score goals, make plays, but you got an edge to you. And that's what is missing from these guys today.
Well, Riv, that's what guys like Gary Roberts and Kevin Dineen, it was like, and I always describe it when talking about any current player now, it was like, if the goal scoring in the hands and the finesse plays aren't kind of there for a particular day, you got to have some kind of B plan, right?
Right.
Or it's like, you got to go out there and run somebody over, get engaged, piss off somebody, get somebody else off their game. And if you don't do that, then your A game's gone and you're just a nothing player out there. And those guys, you know, a lot of credit to them that I was teammates with. They just wouldn't let you not have something else to fall back on. It's like, you better steamroll somebody and or you better do something to contribute to the game.
Were you always that kind of player?
No. Like, well, I had a big transition, PD, where in junior, I was like a playmaking centerman. And I always tried to model my game after Dougie Gilmore because he was like a skilled player that could play both ends of the rink. And was competitive. And I tried to kind of mold my game after that because those were his glory years in Toronto. And I was not right. far by in Guelph. And I got to watch that. And I'm like, that's something to model it after. And then I got to the NHL and things always change. You kind of shift and everybody goes into a different direction. And I ended up being a shooting scoring winger, or that's what I tried to be. You know, you make some acquisitions on your team. We acquired Keith Primo. We got Ronnie Francis. And I was lucky enough to ride shotgun with Ronnie Francis for about 5 years, one of the best players to ever play. And he's been a big part of what I do on television now, just with looking at plays and how simple and smooth things can look and how also stupid things, like throwing the puck away blind, like, I always hear Ronnie in my ear when I'm analyzing games, whether it be Leaf games, World Juniors. And it's like, that's just such a silly play because he just broke it down so simply, you know, never throw the puck away. Always try to be smart, nothing stupid. So he was a great guy for me to play with. And it was a great transition for me because when you move from center to the wing, man, life gets a little bit easier. Not skating your ass off all over the ice, playing low in your own zone, that was a gift from God switching to right wing. I'll tell you that.
Had you played wing before?
No, but Riv, how easy is it? If you can't play wing, you're dumb.
Hey, it's very simple. I've been telling Petey this for years.
You must have been sitting back there a lot of nights saying, like, this guy, like, if you catch a winger sleeping, it's so easy just to sneak right down the slot, go to the net, and you must be like, this guy's a dummy. Like, if you can't adjust to the wing, man, you got serious problems, because I thought it was a dream transition. I'm like, because back in those days, there wasn't, like, both defensemen rushing up the ice. So it's like you got some big, slow defenseman back there that never joined the rush. I would literally be looking out of the corner of my eye saying, I just got to follow that guy up the ice and not let him score. And he ain't moving right now, so I ain't either. Now it's like a track meet back and forth. It's like even right. Roddy Brind'Amour in Carolina says, we have a competition with our forwards, or if we turn the puck over, it's a race back to our own zone. It wasn't like that back in the day, man. It was like that big, slow defenseman right there. I just can't let him get back there and score because he's my man and he can't score.
So right, what do you think of the game today? Auston Matthews, I mean, we haven't seen anything like this. I know you talk about it a lot up there, but...
Well, you like say what? Auston Matthews too, but you can throw in two guys this year. You look at Connor McDavid getting 100 assists, fourth guy in history, and then you could have Nikita Kucherov follow him. You could have two guys that get 100 assists. That's only five guys in the history of the game, and you look at what... Auston Matthews doing right now, goal scoring wise, like, where do you think the game is right now?
Well, I think as far as stardom and those guys moving the needle and must watch TV, I think it's pretty solid place when you've got, and it's going to be a fascinating Hart Trophy voting because right. I mean, you got a guy that's going to get 70 goals, and you also like each and every guy's got a compelling case, Riv, where you look at what McDavid did this year and what that, how big of a dumpster fire that was in right. November. It was a mess where you're like, yeah. This team with these players are going to miss the playoffs. I thought it was a slam dunk. I'm like, they're not digging out of this ditch, because Mike Johnson will always come on and be like, you do the numbers, they got to play X amount of hockey the rest of the way, 700. It was ridiculous. And he goes, right. That doesn't really seem that sustainable. And they almost won the division. So for right. Connor McDavid to have the year and dig those guys out of that ditch, because as good as Draisaitl was, it was about McDavid, Zach Hyman, and them being on the same line. It was just an incredible story. And then you got MacKinnon in Colorado, the home point scoring streak. He scored three goals the other night that the three of us, we didn't have a highlight pack like that in practice all of our careers. They were disgusting, all in the same game.
Yeah.
And Kucherov, I mean – you guys know this, but I don't know if like even like a diehard hockey fan understands how good this Kucherov is. Like if you go and watch this guy live, the way he distributes the puck and his movements on the ice, like he's
an artist.
Is something else, man. I watched him live with my kids on March break in Tampa Bay. And I'm like, I haven't seen a guy move the puck around on the power play like that since Gretz. Like he just finding the open man and being deceptive and shifting away from trouble. He's an outrageous talent. And then you throw in Matthews with the 70 goals, which I kind of think it's crazy to think, because some people believe that if you score 70, it trumps all the other performances, but you just really can't discard what Kucherov, MacKinnon and McDavid. So I think as far as star power and much watch TV every night, like it's pretty damn good. You know, so I talk about the league and the animosity guys, but there's those star players, but man, there were some bad teams this year. And there was some just awful games. Like we talked about the Tuesday nighter with two terrible teams where there's no animosity, no physicality. I mean, last night, how good was that Detroit Montreal game? There was some juice flowing. Obviously right. There was a lot of at stake and we all played for a while and you have some stinkers. But it was nice to see that juice in Detroit last night and what an unbelievable win by Detroit.
There's still a lot out there. Like Montreal has to go back and play the Detroit Red Wings again. And
tonight
they can be the biggest spoilers, you know, of their whole season going into that one game and knocking out Detroit. Like how amazing would that be, right? You have the, you know, Washington Capitals still hanging on. I don't know how they're doing it with the team that they have
tonight.
Did you guys watch the Capitals early in the season? They look so bad.
Yep.
I'm like, this Spencer Carberry's got an absolute mess on his hands. To see where they're at right now with a, in a position to, I think if they win, they clinch, right?
Yes. Yep.
That's an incredible job by Carberry, man, because that team was so bad at the beginning of the play. I thought they were going to be as bad as San Jose. Ovi couldn't score. He couldn't skate. They were awful. They weren't getting saves. And now if they win, they clinch. That's an incredible turnaround.
Ovi had like 8 goals in like 40 games or something like that. It was ludicrous. And now he's a 30-goal scorer, which is just like stupid.
Incredible.
Yeah,
it is incredible.
Who is your Hart Trophy winner? Do you get a vote?
No. I was approached like 2 or 3 years into my broadcasting saying, do you want to vote on some awards now that you're doing this stuff? I'm like, absolutely. I'd take pride in it. I'd do my work, blah, blah, blah. And I just never heard back. And you can tell that there's people that vote that I don't think they watch 10 games a year. They just, for some reason, they vote. And I mean, if you go back, I think you have to put your name on your vote now. There's been some ridiculous votes. Like some guy did not vote McDavid the year he last year?
Yeah.
Like he didn't vote McDavid and it wasn't unanimous with that season he had. That's like that to me, you should lose your vote. That's insane.
Who'd you mention? McDavid? You mentioned
Kucherov, MacKinnon, and Matthews.
Is that it? Is that all that there is? Like no Pastrnak? Riv wants to make an argument for Pastrnak. I mean,
you know what? It's a great point, PD, because it's almost like Pastrnak gets overlooked and he shouldn't because of the success of the Boston Bruins. Like you look what that team did this year following last year without Bergeron, without Krejci. And this guy's the stud in the team. I didn't think
they were going to make the playoffs last year and they set a record.
Me neither. I'm like the beginning of the season in September. I'm like, this team might shit the bed and miss the playoffs this year.
Yes,
and they set a record. They set a record for the best team ever.
Yes.
And then they lose Bergeron. And I'm like, maybe this is one of those transition years where they're just going to maybe, you know, showcase some new guys and try to move forward and do that kind of retool.
Yeah. Nope.
And that Jimmy Montgomery, he should be up for coach of the year again, doing it again. It's incredible.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
They lost a lot of star power on that team. You know, you talk about Krejci and Bergeron, but you look at Orlov, you look at Taylor Hall, Bertuzzi, like they lost a lot of players for nothing.
Yeah.
And man, they're still getting it done. I just don't know what they do. It's just, and that's,
Riz, but it's all in their foundation. It's like Ray Bourque to Chara to Bergeron to Marchand and McAvoy. It's like they have a system in place where there's a certain, you know, way to do things where they know it works. And it's also once you walk in the locker room, wherever you come from, whether it be a draft pick or you're traded, it's a non-negotiable thing where you're going to toe the line and be a Boston Bruin. And then the proof is in the pudding because all they have to say is, look at what we're doing. It's not like you can deviate and go on your own plan and be an asshole or play the wrong way, because what we do works here, and that's what you're going to continue to do.
Ask him the question then. Come on. We got to ask him about the Sabres.
Well, I was literally just going to say, I don't know if you knew this before you sat down, but Donnie Granato was fired this morning.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah.
Got 2 minutes before you came on, we found out that Don Granato was let go by Kevin Adams.
They probably had to do it as just a mercy type thing because – you guys are around it a lot. You talk about it a lot. But now there's another coach gone. And there's organizations that have young guys like the LA Kings and when they won their cups and the Chicago Blackhawks and the Pittsburgh Penguins, where they took that step and there was success right away and then cups right away. And if the players that are going on the ice aren't even sniffing that, and the two examples right now are Ottawa and Buffalo, then you got to look to change up the mix because now we're getting into another coach there. And I like Kevin Adams a lot. He's a former teammate of mine. And I think he understands what needs to be done there, but they need to change up the mix of players. And if they, like you're seeing a bunch.
And what do you mean by that? What do you mean change up the mix of players?
Riv, I just think that some of these teams that are rebuilding, they just think that it's almost like they fall in love with their own players, where it's like, these are the guys that are going to get it done. And sometimes they're not the guys that are going to get it done. So you guys know better than anybody, the best evaluation you can have is of your own players. And if you're overvaluing your own guys, saying those are the guys that are going to get us out of this ditch, and they continually don't do it year after year, you got to get some different players, man. Like, to just say, oh, that young stud, like all these guys together, maybe all of them together aren't. So I think you have to, and Ottawa's in the same boat, where you have to take a serious look at it and say, and maybe you got to shock some people and change up the mix, where it's not the guy you thought. Like, you might have to move something good to get something different.
Are you talking Brady Tkachuk?
I'm not talking Brady Tkachuk. Yeah, you're not getting Brady Tkachuk out of Ottawa, man. Yeah, I'm hearing those stupid rumors now.
He's my favorite player in the league, man.
Yeah, one of mine too. But you look at Ottawa and you look at him, and it's like, how many nights do you see Brady Tkachuk happen to punch somebody in the head and fight somebody? And it's like, why isn't that Shabbat one night? Why isn't that Drake Batherson doing that? It's always Brady Tkachuk.
Always.
And that's what I'm talking about with their mix. It's like, how come there's not other guys engaged, where it's like, always, you know how mentally draining that must be, and how many sticks that guy's broken in the locker room, saying, does anyone else in here care? Why do I have to fight every night? Why do I have to care more than anybody? Yeah. And sometimes it's a little over the top, but it's like, he needs somebody to join the party.
But he cares, right? He cares. 35 goal scorer. He's physical. Every single highlight when you watch the next morning, Brady Tkachuk is involved, and he cares, and he wants to win. And I 100% agree exactly what you're saying, that there needs to be someone else step up that can take over at least part of that position of energy, right? But you know, Buffalo's in the exact opposite. We don't have any guys that are willing to do that. I mean, the team is very skilled, but it's almost like when you have so much skill and no role players, no toughness, that, I mean, these kids are
skating. Well, listen, right there, Jeff, right there in Toronto, can you not say that in the last few years, part of the Leafs' focus has been trying to find these character depth players that play hard nosed? Like, that's they've established who their studs are. They've had their studs for years. Yeah. Finding the right mix of players to fit around them is kind of what I feel like. Your rugged defenseman, couple more rugged scoring forwards, a fourth line guy like Ryan Reeves, love him or hate him. I mean, you've added a lot to that team, and that was a huge missing piece a few years ago.
Petey, if for anybody that thinks, excuse me, that you're just going to bring in a bunch of talent and have success that way, and the only way I can describe it is, if you just throw in a bunch of skill, and they tried it in Toronto for the longest time, you just don't play for keeps. Like, you just, it's like rush up and down the ice, and it's like, come playoff time or critical moments in the game, you're just not playing for keeps, and you got guys doing stupid things and trying saucer passes in critical moments of the game. You've got to play for keeps. And it's like, I describe it as a skilled player, where they skate and the tip of their, you know, the toe of their stick is like tiptoeing on the ice. Patrice Bergeron's full blade of his stick was on the ice, and the guy played for keeps. He knew when to get it out. He knew when to get it in. He knew when to be smart. And he's a Hall of Famer. He's not a character guy. So if these teams think they're just going to load up with this ultimate skill, and you got to have skill to score goals and win games and have a great power play, but if you don't have guys that play for keeps, and it goes back to the original comments we talked about, just the way these guys are these days, it's like every kid grows up and they think it's Connor McDavid time. Get out the plastic sticks and practice, and I want to just outskill this thing. I'll skill my way to everything. And when it comes down to it, man, that shit's for practice half the time. How many guys can do that during a game? Like, I look at a kid in Ottawa, Tim Stützle, unbelievable talent. I think he got 90 points plus last year. But if that guy doesn't start playing for keeps in both ends of the rink and be a counted-on guy, defensive zone face, I don't even think he's a centerman, to be quite honest with you. But there's a guy that's a perfect example. Unbelievable talent, but if he doesn't start playing for keeps and understanding the competitive elements of the game, Ottawa's not going to change. It'll just be 5-2 losses and 5-2 losses. and they might win some and get hot and get people excited. And another thing, guys, that's appropriate for both Ottawa and Buffalo. If you don't get people in net to stop pucks, man, you don't have a chance anyway. So we could talk about all this nonsense, but if you don't have a guy back there, and I know they caught the kid Levi, and timelines are different for every goaltender, but if you're going to be throwing in guys in the net that can't stop pucks, you got no shot. You got no chance to develop because you're digging it out of your net the whole night. It's insane.
So we were talking about some of the playoff teams, like the race to get in. Who's your favorite to win it? Like, can the Leafs actually do it this year, or is this
the Leafs have been so good for so many? Come on,
I know what you guys are trying to do. I know what you guys are trying to do.
Predict it right now.
What am I trying? What am I trying to do? You think I'm trying to lure you into something to get you to answer something about the Leafs? They're going to have a tough pull in the first.
Okay, I'll say it.
Jeff O'Neill just said they're winning the cup, baby. Let's go.
Yeah. I don't know if they have enough on their back end, and their goaltending can be scary at times because I really don't know who's going to start game one right now. It's like the goaltending has a pattern of a couple great games and then either like gets nicked up and it's like, holy, like, can you not put together a month of solid goaltending? So it seems to be an up and down kind of story of its own where it's like, who's going to take control here? And their decor, it's like we've been talking about the decor of the monster teams that won cups, Tampa, Colorado, Vegas, monsters back there. Riv, you played the position. You know how important it is to have guys back there that play for keeps and have length, and they just put out fires in the corner. They get it out. They move it. They distribute it to the floor. It's so key. So can Toronto's kind of semi-revamped decor do that? The one thing I will say is they got a bit of a different feel to them, right? They got some edge to their team. And I think the idea of smallish skill is slowly starting to filter out, and they got a different edge to them. So could it happen? Of course they have, but they're going to be playing a great team in the first round. So it's crazy that they had these expectations and they got to take a step, but there's good teams going home in the first round and they could easily be one.
That is a conference final first round matchup. Any other year.
Damn, I mean, straight it is.
Like, it's that first round Leaf series might be one of the biggest series in the NHL of first round knockouts. I really believe that.
Absolutely. You can talk about luck or getting breaks or Mitch Marner, William Nylander, and Austin Matthews, and they do need goaltending. It's very key. They got to go out and make some luck. They got to go out and make some breaks, and they got to go create some of their own energy and just get it done.
Well, they don't know.
Do they have enough? Do they have enough behind those guys, though? Like, I mean, the thought of most people on the outside looking at Toronto is, you know, you've gone, you've paid all this money to these top guys and Matthews, Tavares, Mitch Marner, now William Nylander, and you're like top heavy, right? And then when you talk about the defense and you talk about the goaltending, there hasn't quite been the same amount of money put into those positions, because they're so top heavy in the top four guys. Like, what do you think's going to happen if Toronto goes out of the playoff, let's just say in the first round? Like, at what point in time do you look to move a Mitch Marner or someone like that to gain a top end defense stud?
I don't know why it hasn't happened already, Riv. Going to the wall 6, 7, 8 years in a row with the same type of philosophy. You're noticing that Max Domi and Tyler Bertuzzi playing with Austin Matthews. Matthews is still scoring. You don't need $11.5 million guys to complement an $11 million guy. So if this doesn't work, and I'm not going to specifically point out Mitch Marner because he seems to always take the brunt of it.
Yeah, like, I just threw him out. He's awesome.
Yeah. So, but you have to look at it. Tavares has got one more year coming off the books, and Nylander is obviously locked into a monster contract. But if this doesn't work again this year, and the one thing, the counterpoint to the lack of depth is they had a setup a couple games ago where Nylander was on a line with two young kids. Marner was on a line with Tavares and Nyes, I believe, or Tavares and McMahon. And then Austin Matthews was with Domi. So can that kind of separate and provide some depth? And then the fourth line is the fourth line. They can hopefully chip in whenever, but we'll see what that works. But if they want to start throwing them together, It wouldn't shock me if at the end of a series you say, you know what, there just wasn't enough depth here, depth this year. Because I've done that Sports Center hit six times already. There's just not enough there. Yeah. It's,
you know what's,
it's
amazing?
Either the big guys don't get it done, or the goaltending, or there just wasn't. There's been seven different Sports Center.
Or it's the Boston curse, right? You know,
it's whatever. It's just I've done the hit 7 years in a row, so it's I don't want to do it again. I'd like to see them succeed. And they just got to say, screw it. It's the last phase of any slump where you just like, you know what? Screw this. Let's just go out and play our asses off and win.
The Leafs won the cup. It would be a spectacle to see what would happen.
Yeah, there's a lot of people that like Leafs Nation. You guys know what happens when the Leafs play down there. They travel better than any other organization in the league. And to see something, to see it would be incredible. Even for the people that want to hate watch it around Canada, around the league, because there, as much as there's Leafs Nation and it's this big, massive group, there's a lot of hate watching too, where people are like, screw the Leafs, man. I hate them. I hate the fans. I hate Toronto. Yes. So the combination of the you know, the mass pros viewer, and cons would be awesome.
The mass viewership is your Leaf Nation and then the hatred toward the Leafs. Like,
it would be a spectacle.
Which is
PD,
just as
no
big.
Question.
Do you remember some of those crowds? No, they weren't as large as they are now, but you had 6,000-7,000 people in the building back then. I mean, it was probably 60-40.
I didn't think anything of it, PD, because it was like that everywhere we went. Rangers, there was Leaf fans everywhere. But it seemed like that crowd the other night in Buffalo was 80% Leaf fans. Am I not correct saying that? Like,
yes.
It was a little much. I was like, if I was a Sabre, I'd be like, what the hell's going on here, man? Like, it's time to get greasy and start blocking these people from coming in, because who the hell wants to skate out there and see that? And ultimately, it was an exciting crowd. But if you're one of the Sabres players, it's a little deflating where you're like, what's going on here? This is a home game.
What was it like for you to get drafted by Hartford?
I loved it because I just didn't care. We all had the dream of playing in the NHL, and it was almost like, just give me any team and I'll be happy to be there. And it was cool because I got drafted by Hartford in Hartford. So that was great. You know, it was like the draft was in Hartford, and it was the first pick for Jimmy Rutherford as the GM. And it was just, it was a fun time to be drafted first, you know, in the first round. And I loved playing in Hartford. And then you play 2 years, and then we get the word that we're moving down to Raleigh. So it was great. I loved everything about it. I mean, we're old now, man. We look back on it, and just to play in the big leagues for the amount of time we did, it was just a fantastic experience.
I feel like kids like to maybe hope to go a certain place. I don't know that it is just about getting drafted.
Well, they're pick and choosing a little bit, aren't they? Where it's like, and that's what I talked about, the entitlement, the power, where it's like some of these young stars, they've had their butts kissed since they were 13 years old with agents and teams giving them, you know, promising the world. It's like, hang on a second here. There's just, I mean, look at the kid in Philadelphia. Wouldn't you think that American kid would be just fired up to play for the Flyers? And I don't know what was motivated behind him wanting to get out of there, but that never really happened. It was like Eric Lindros was the only guy that had the power to do that back in the day. Not anyone else, not a second round pick, not a random first round pick. It was like, you just go to the team and you'd be happy to be there. That's just not the way it is these days.
Well, the Quebec Nordiques in 1991 and the Philadelphia Flyers in 2024 are in much different situations at the, you know, when you talk about franchise stability. Did you see that kid's comments the other day before the final? Same kid.
Just why are you going to, like, it's, now it's just going to come back. And if something happens where he doesn't perform well, it's going to be like, well, this kid's just a smart ass and he doesn't get it. Yeah. It's just be quiet now. You've done your thing. You've talked and you've wanted out. And now just go play hockey and try to
again. And
player.
There's, it's the arrogance. I've been talking with Petey about this kid. You know, I had an older son that was the same age and we played against all these kids, the Lane Hudson and the Cutter Gauthier's. And Cutter Gauthier is, I told Petey, he is going to be a superstar in this league. He's big, he's fast, he can score, he's got edge to him. He is literally one of the ultimate hockey players. And if he puts it all together and if he can kind of keep it between the ears, he is going to be one heck of a player.
Yeah, and it's just, You just said, Riv, it just sounded like you described a Philadelphia Flyer player. You know, it's like
it doesn't make any sense.
Work out? It doesn't. And now he's going to go to a team. Like, you would think he'd be like, I'm going to be joining the Flyers that are trying to go on the upswing here, and I can be a part of that. Now right. He's going to go to an Anaheim team that's going to be terrible for another 2 or 3 years. God knows what they're going to do to get out of that ditch. But, I mean, obviously they're on the upswing too. But I was just like, I thought that would be a perfect opportunity for him to establish himself as like a great Philadelphia Flyer.
Look at the team you played on as a rookie in Hartford. Wow. By the way, Hartford was sneaky good in Sega with how fast those players were. They had, if I'm not mistaken, was Robert Kron not ridiculously fast? So there,
Robert Kron was one of the most skilled players I ever played with. He was unbelievable. My first line was Brendan Shanahan and Nelson Emerson. Like, just great players. Like, great to play with, where it was like, these guys make plays and score goals. That's what they were all about.
Andrew Castles, Jeff Sanderson.
No, he was not fast.
No, he wasn't.
Sanderson was fast as hell, and he could shoot the puck, man. Yeah. Those are just great. Like, it was great to be a part of Hartford. I know it's not like a big market, and they got swallowed up by Bruins fans being so close and the Rangers being so close, but I love playing in Hartford.
Cool rink, too. Really cool rink.
I played there once.
The mall.
I played there once. I'll never forget. I was skating around the ice, you know, when we jump on the ice for pregame skate. And Mario Tremblay comes up to me, and he, in his broken English, says, you starting the game tonight, and you're going to go. And I just look at him, yeah, I'm going to go. I'll do my best. And he's like, no, you're going to go. And I'm thinking to myself, like, I came out of junior as an offensive defenseman. Like, what is going on that I'm being asked to fight, you know, before the game even starts? Anyway, I remember smoking Kelly Chase, which I was like, please don't. Like,
I hit him. Guy to score around.
Yeah, I just hit him. I knew that he was the tough guy, and I hit him as hard as I could, and I knocked him down. And I can't remember who I fought. Daniels.
Jeff Daniels.
Jeff Daniels.
I don't know.
That guy was tough.
Scott Daniels? Was there a Scott
Daniels? Scott Daniels. Scott Daniels, yes.
He was a native guy that he was tough. He's tough. Anyway, that was the one game I played in Hartford.
I'll tell you what, Jeff, one coach I wish I had played for in my life would have been Paul Maurice.
Yeah, he's been around a long time. I mean, when he coached me in Hartford, I had him for a long time because Hartford, Carolina, and then I go to Toronto, and he ends up coming to Toronto too. So he was basically my coach my whole career. I think he's at a point now where he's basically seen and done everything behind the bench, and he's seen it all. And he knows how to adapt and adjust and what to expect around the corner, because there's not a scenario that he's not familiar with.
Yeah.
So kudos to him. He's got a good setup down there in Florida, and he knew kind of what he thought when was the time to pull the plug in Winnipeg, and now he's got a great scenario.
Couple rapid fire questions. O-Dog, that's the nickname. If you were a dog, what kind of dog would you be?
I think a German Shepherd, man. They're smart. They got some bite to them. They know what's up. I'd go German Shepherd.
Favorite dinner place in the NHL?
Oh, good one.
You know what? Ronnie Francis used to have all these secret squirrel Italian places that were holes in the wall in Long Island, Jersey. I just forget the name of them, but it was the best food you'll ever eat in your life. I honestly don't even remember the name, but those were the best ones. Like, not the big Abe and Louie's in Boston. It was like those little hole in the walls.
Right.
And he always had a spot in every city.
Did
some
you
little
say
dives so, and,
you like Abe and Louie's, or you don't? You didn't like it.
It was okay, but my favorites were those kind of like just those little small places.
A team that you wished you played for?
I already got that. Leafs, I already played for the Leafs. It was like a dream come true.
If there was a second team, what would it be?
I think I would have liked to do the Florida scene or the LA scene, where I played in Carolina, but it would just have been a different market.
What about Arizona?
Just like LA or
that would have cost you more money. You would have been driving another
Just more
Porsche.
Trouble and more
Could you imagine life in Arizona when Gretzky was coaching and JR was there?
Those guys got a scene on their hands now, figuring out their life. I'll tell you that.
From what I heard, Clayton Keller built some unbelievable place out there in Arizona, and now he's got to kiss it goodbye, I guess, at least for the year-round gig.
That sucks, man.
Favorite teammate?
Favorite teammate would have been Kevin Dineen. He was my roommate for a long time, just a great guy. Become great friends and still keep in touch, so he was a great mentor for me.
My brother played for him in Portland. Absolutely.
Yeah, he's a great guy, man.
Yeah.
Is that the guy that you just followed around when you're the young up and coming guy, so naive to the league in every aspect, right?
Well, I didn't have a choice because he was my roommate and we ended up just hanging out and it would always be like, don't do this, don't do that. So I had no choice.
I love what you're doing on TV up there. I love the broadcasts. Like, yeah. I'm saying this in all sincerity. I think you're the best in the business by far. Here's to you.
I appreciate you saying that. Thanks for having me. Cheers.
That'll do it for After the Whistle, presented by Seneca Buffalo Creek Casino. Nothing else comes close.